elevate.
Episode 10, the Elevate Podcast, and today's guest we have Big Dave Fox, as he's commonly known. So I'm just going to read out a wee bit of Dave's background and his credentials in competing as a bodybuilder. So, 1988, schoolboy meet, NI, Mr. Northern Ireland overall champion 1997 and 1998, overall Mr. Ireland winner in 2007, Mr. World Class 2 winner 2008, Mr. Britain overall winner 2013. Runner-up class.
He's posing here, guys, just so you know. He's throwing up double biceps, front double biceps.
Runner-up class 2 in the NAB Universe. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. Thanks, to the podcast, bud.
Thanks, Noel. Thanks for having us over here.
So, how's things?
Good. Aye. I've spent things differently on a Friday evening, but sure. That's what I have to do for today, you know.
Coming on talking to us two, boys.
Hello.
Yes. All right, so we'll open up the questions just, Dave. Well, actually, you know what we'll do? We'll let you fucking introduce yourself and give a wee bit of background of how you started in bodybuilding, how you ended up getting all them fucking accolades that we're sitting reading out there, and maybe some front double bicep poses.
Yeah, we'll get a few poses in, teacher. Right. It's me and Fox just to start doing a bit of posing.
Why not? So how did you actually get started? What was your initial inspiration to start? And you came from a kind of rugby background first, didn't you?
Right. Played rugby at school and enjoyed rugby. I was really good at it too, and I sort of had to make a bit of a
decision
between rugby and bodybuilding. So started a bit of bodybuilding too when I was 17. Seen myself grow fairly fast. Then Pete's gym came along. Pete's my brother. He's passed away now, but he started the Pete's gym. It was more or less the first bodybuilding gym in Derry, you know. So I was still playing rugby and started training too. As I say, the body started changing, started growing muscle fairly fast, and decided I like this, I like the look, and competed then for the first show, as Foxy says, schoolboy Mr. Ulster, 1988, long time ago, and won that.
What age were you?
I was 18.
Aye.
So if you work at it, I'm about 48 now, so nearly 49, so getting on in years, but still feeling good, you know. Yeah. But apart from that, back to the bodybuilding at the start, after winning the first show, just had a love for the sport and got stuck in right away, you know, and started reading magazines. There was no internet back then, so all we had was magazines, bit of TV, bit of, you know, Sky channels and stuff like that. So you hadn't really got much info. So it was all trial and error. So it took me a few years to get sort of find out my niche between how to bulk up properly, how to diet down properly. Done a lot of shows in between, come in big, soft, you know, and never really found that condition. Mm-hmm. And it took me up to 1997, I think it was, the Mr. Northern Ireland up in Belfast, where I found the size and condition, won that show overall, come back, won it again, so twice in 2 years, and then just went on from there. Yeah. As Foxy says, I've won quite a few shows, done about 40 competitions over the space of 30 years, took a few breaks in between, and I'm still going, still training, still loving the sport.
Yeah,
no more competitions. Well, we'll get the shirt off.
No, I'll keep the shirt on, sir. We'll keep the shirt on.
So see, like you're going back and saying, obviously there's no YouTube and there's no. Who was your, like, what bodybuilder did you kind of look up to at that stage? Maybe aspire to? Obviously Schwarzenegger and Tex Wheeler or not.
Back in the '80s, probably would have been Lee Haney, if you remember him.
Lee Haney.
Lee Haney won it so many times, won it up there. And again, I was buying all the magazines, so Lee Haney was popping up most of the magazines. Always admired his back, you know.
Yeah.
And I always says, right, if you want a big back, you got to train like this.
Yeah.
So that's what I sort of focused on. And when you see your back developing, and you know you've got a good back, then it's one to train.
You just rubbing this into me because I have no fucking back, sir. Or what's, there shouldn't be a lot of back talk. Someone told you to come on here and say,
behind
just
your,
talk about back.
Behind your back?
I'm not looking at your back. All I can see is your arms.
I don't
your
have
chest.
Any fucking back. That's what you look at. I was born with two fronts, sir. Two fronts. Go
that's,
ahead.
That's
sorry,
why you're in physique class. That's why you never show show anything apart from chest
and
arms.
I'll just leave here before the board shirts thing comes out. go ahead, Dave. Sorry.
So inspirations back then would have been Lee Haney, as I say, and then you move on to the likes of Dorian again.
Yeah.
Big backs.
So always aspired to having a good back, and always knew that if you have a good back, you're going to do well. You know, everything else should fall into place. But a lot of guys that don't have a good back weren't one of the major shows. Yeah. So
suppose people do, like, in terms of bodybuilding or training, they get a favorite body part and they really like the emphasis, like plats with legs and quads. That was his main thing as well too. I suppose with Dorian was obviously back, and then yourself was back as well.
And it is back still, Dave. Aye,
your favourite part to train? Your favourite body part?
I know we'll probably discuss this, but what's the one you least favourite? You know,
I don't really have one of them body parts. You know, it's funny, you know, from day one training in the gym, I love training, I love getting in the gym. If I get away from the gym for a few days, I feel like shit, you know. So, like, I train 7 days a week. I still train 7 days a week. I always do
just
something.
Just because you like training.
You know, even it's half an hour, 40 minutes. I still train every day. Yeah. And if I miss a day,
you feel it.
You feel like shit.
Yeah.
So I love training every body part. I love the push of trying to make a body part grow.
Yeah.
And if it's not growing, then try something different. You know, I love that sort of drive, and, you know, let's try something else.
Because you've been known for fucking multiple programs, and, like, I've been in training, you've trained me a couple of times.
Yeah.
It was back, actually, training just so and maybe that's why my back shite. Anyway, but it was all different techniques used. It wasn't just one type of, you know, one thing.
I always go back to the bread and butter exercises, you know, for back, it's chins, T-bars, bent rows, not as much deadlift. I wouldn't be a big deadlift fan. I don't think you need, bodybuilding needs deadlifts too much, you know, just for the thickening the waist, you know, and the sort of the blockiness it gives you.
Yeah.
Do you believe that that's true then? Because there's a lot of people that say, it doesn't do that, But my perception would be,
I would sort of think,
strong,
you know,
cores.
Even if I'm training ladies to your girls, you know, I would say no deadlifts.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't like the look it gives females either, you know, so deadlifts
were but you're talking more about competitive
bodybuilding
females.
Competitive females.
No, yeah. I just would be against, you know, I know you're probably, you know, you're for deadlifts. I know you probably
do a lot
of deadlifts. You have a different outlook, you have different programs. But for me, I wouldn't give deadlifts for women.
An aesthetic background. If he's looking from a calorie.
From a functional.
Functional. Yeah. And obviously it's a big movement, so you're going to burn a lot of calories. But I get, from an aesthetic point of view, the core thing could be an issue. And maybe, I don't know, injuries.
And just, if you go back to, you look at a lot of videos going up on Facebook now, and guys, PTs, giving girls deadlifts. And the deadlift, the form is brutal. You know, and you're sort of squinting. You can't even look at it, it's that bad. Yeah. And you're thinking, somebody should come in and say, stop, Adam. You know,
somebody's going to get hurt.
So
going back to even, like, you were up and coming, starting your whole bodybuilding journey, in terms of who would you look at, even kind of, like, within the North or even in Ireland, who was your maybe competition or inspiration or somebody that was doing really well?
I think I'll mention big Graham McConkey.
Graham.
Passed again a few years back, but I think I only met him for a short period of time. I knew of him when he was like a monster back 20 years ago. He's a guy who always hid away, you know, he never came to the forefront. He always trained in the gym. Nobody seen him until competition day. And then they're going, holy shit, who's this guy? Because he was like a mini Dorian, you know, as for muscle, as for condition. He was just a freak, you know what I mean? So when I hooked up with Graham was so down to earth. Such a nice guy. Couldn't believe it, you know, and he gave me so much knowledge in such a short time. He came down to my gym, trained, excuse me, and showed me a lot of techniques, you know, and always came down, chatted to the guys, you know, and gave them all the time of the day. So he was a big inspiration, you know, and his wife too, Carol, she came down as well, and we travelled up to his gym. But, you know, he's one of them guys that just gave so much to the sport, had so much love and
he was a huge
passion.
Ambassador of bodybuilding. I remember backstage, the first time I ever met him, it was at WABA, competing, first show, shitting myself, and this big fella just came over and started chatting to me, you know, saying, you know, being fucking really civil, giving me out great information. Didn't know who the fuck he was. Took time to look at a fucking scared youngster who was getting on stage. And it was Graham, obviously. Great. And after that, I fucking always had a lot of utmost respect for him. Like, yeah. I've seen him in your place loads, and you obviously connected with him loads, and he was massive for bodybuilding. So and when he did pass, it was huge.
Give him a shout out. You know, 100%, but a lot of guys. He helped a lot of guys, and he's still, you know, still passing information on through bodybuilding and
through guys that have worked with him, man.
Yeah,
just carrying on. Yeah. And then the gym you trained in was Pete's. That was the top of House Pete's, of Value, man.
Yeah, Road. That was on the Strand Road, probably opened late 80s, yeah. You know, so I would have been just around 17, 18. Pete,
was it, was there was no other gym in the town, really?
No, that's it. That, you know, there was like the complex, which had a room with like a multi-gym,
that's right,
a couple of dumbbells. Floor, so we trained there too, you know. And that was pretty bad, like, but at the time...
That was the first gym I joined.
You loved it, you know. There was a room downstairs, and it was like there was 10 bodybuilders in it. And you're thinking, where's all these guys coming out of? You know, but Pete then seen this vision, had the vision, he had the know-how. He probably seen the opening and thought, you know, this is going to work here and Derry. This is what Derry needs, is a sort of a hardcore bodybuilding gym. Not just, he wasn't just going down the bodybuilding route, but it sort of turned out to be a bodybuilding gym because there was guys coming from Strabane, from Letterkenny. They were driving from everywhere just to train here, you know, and the atmosphere, as you say, was electric. You know, everybody was there and the machines were rough and ready, you know. Everything was welded in the backyard and everything was coated in heavy, heavy grease, so it would run sort of half smooth, but nothing runs smooth. All the angles were all off, wrong, but you know, you got a work out there and you thought, I can grow here, you know, I can build the body here.
Sawdust type stuff. Just.
So that would have been Pete was one of my first inspirations to get stuck in and learn from him. And I improved, like, you know, when you're early 20s, you just grow like a weed anyway. You know, anything you do, if you're eating 2 meals a day, 3 meals a day, you're still going to grow. So one of them periods just where your body just kept on growing fairly, very quick.
Yeah. Did you get that stage when you probably noticed then where things weren't kind of growing and you're going, what's happening? Why is it slowing down? What did you do personally in terms of, did you have to change up your nutrition? Did you have to change your principles in terms of training?
Well, that period in between like being a schoolboy, junior,
because at that time too, it's obviously there's a lot more out there now that you can do and change. At that time, it was kind of,
you had no information, ancient. You had nobody helping you, you know, you're on your own. You had no information on food, diet, no supplements. Right. You had nobody selling really any of my supplements. You know, I remember we were buying that desiccated liver tablets, if you were, if you remember those, and they were like horse tablets, and you had to swallow like a handful of them, and they tasted like shit, you know, and then you had to wash this down with a bloody Castle 90. And I don't know if you ever tasted that.
Tar.
That was like wallpaper paint or
you
wallpaper.
You go to the chemist or something?
So we were taking these tablets on one hand, then you were washing it down with this fucking like polyfilla, you know, and I was like, those were hard days, like, you know, you had no good flavors and proteins. You mixed a banana with a chasm and that was your banana protein. You know what I mean? So times were tough, but we done it. You know, we got through it and we built some good physiques back in.
I was going to say, the physiques were fucking incredible back in the day. And maybe the condition might have been out in some of them. I don't know, but the videos that I've watched from even 2000 and before,
I like that type of physique. I think I like the more classic look, which kind of was about more then and even before in the 70s and 60s.
Well, back in the Northern Ireland days, I was up in the Park Avenue in Belfast, right, and Ivan was running it. And I just remember the stage was probably the size of that
this tiny
thing here in front of me.
Yeah.
It was like six before stage, and you had maybe 10 guys packed on
bouncing
it.
Around it.
But you had the likes of Harold Penny, you know, Nicky Chung, Big Rob McBride. You had some great physiques back in, and I was mixing with them guys. You had Marty Monaghan from Strabane, you had Sammy Logue from Strabane, and the physiques were phenomenal, for having the less than we'd know-how back in. We had basic stuff, and we built some great physiques.
Yeah. So do you think that that's down to, obviously, the intensity of training? Because it's clearly not down to your nutritional knowledge.
No.
It's not down to the machines being better. No. It's not down to the knowledge of the movement being better.
Yeah.
It's down to the fact that these were just intense fucking animals.
I just trained, you know, we just trained and trained. I remember Marty Mullen used to thumb. Thumb from Strabane. Thumb a left down.
Crazy.
Train with dibs for 2 hours or whatever. Thumb
he
a left back.
He's an animal trainer. I've seen that boy train recently. He's still an animal.
There's not many boys would do that, you know.
No, definitely not.
And when they were in that gym, it was like 2 hours, you know, heavy weights, you know.
You weren't on the mess around or going on Instagram.
And it was all sure. There was no cameras that day.
So how do you feel it's changed?
So I think it has changed for the best. You know, you still have your classic physiques, you still have the competitions who cater for that sort of old style classic physique. You still have the hardcore heavy duty bodybuilders, mm. and then you have this new breed in, you know, so it's catering for everybody. There's so many shows now. Mm. Back in them days, you had NABBA, you had maybe a couple of Irish shows in the south, and that was it. Mm. You know, you had to go through the same route. You had to go NABBA, Northern Ireland, NABBA, Britain. And then if you were good enough, you went to the words of the universe, and that was more or less it.
Yeah. Suppose people are making, it's nearly that people are actually making some sort of a living out of it now as well too. Like we're,
I'm sure.
Well, there's not ever, again, you have to be kind of high up to be actually making a living from bodybuilding. But even, because it's just a passion and an expense, basically, really.
Even if you can get a wee bit of help through the way, you know, and some guys,
some,
you know,
supplement support.
Supplements, you know, a lot of boys would be getting support by supplements and clothing. And
there's definitely, you know, more notoriety now, you know, like you can fucking be on Facebook, be an average enough competitor, but if your information's out there, it's good.
Yeah.
People start asking you to come and do certain
endorsing
things.
Supplements and stuff. Thing, people are getting
Whereas you obviously had none of that, I'm sure, for sponsorship, was it an absolute premium if you were?
You helped, you sponsored yourself. You done whatever you took, you know, you stood in the door at the weekends and, you know, you worked whatever you could to save the money to head away to these shows, you know.
It's proper passion, there's a proper love for it, like whenever you were obviously doing it. And anybody around you that was involved in it, you know, was for the love of the sport, because there was no real notoriety for doing it. Whereas now, I suppose, if you do a show, you're going to get a few likes on Facebook and, you know, get a wee bit of... But realistically, the kind of... the motivation for doing it's changed. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, there
maybe I think you still have to have a love for that kind of sport because it's so demanding.
It's tough. And, it's so demanding. The thing that you said, how many shows have you done?
Close to 40.
Like 40 shows? Yeah. I cried my way through show prep. Yeah, fucking four was, shows or whatever I'd done.
There was years that I'd done like maybe five shows in the space of 5 weeks, you know.
Jesus.
And that went on maybe for 2 or 3 years. So you were dieting from January right through, and you never really had an off, you know. You were dieting more or less the full year. You had maybe a month here and a month there, and it was like just constant. It was like, you know, your cardio, your diet, your everything was on point. You know, you couldn't really, you couldn't really slip up. You couldn't take a break. You couldn't really go on holidays.
What was your mindset? Like, because I'm thinking, it's obviously going to get fucking tedious after a while. Because back in the day, I'm sure it was probably chicken and rice, broccoli, and that's what you lived on diet-wise. Mm. There was no real
fats.
Information out there. Very
low
fats.
A few banana sandwiches threw on there. My mum used to make get them in the air, son. They'll bulky up.
How did you stay motivated to actually do them? Like, what was your drive?
You know, see, when I was like early 20s, I thought I was going to be a pro.
Of course.
And that was it. You know, I just had this, I'm going to do this. You know, I thought, you know, I was growing that fast and I was starting to win things, and you know, I thought I could maybe be a pro someday. You know, but then after a while, then you be realistic about the whole thing. You think, it's never going to happen. Yeah. You know what I mean?
But the thing is like in a different time. Maybe now with the, like as you say, like things that are happening now, and especially with the support that you get, and maybe the different type of advice. You know, if it was a different generation, it could have happened.
I think it probably would have grown twice as fast. You know what I mean?
But what do you think?
Twice as big.
Is there a genetic ceiling for that? Like, would you say, would it matter? Would you stop at some point, even if you had all the information in the world, you'd all everything to back you up on it to actually get there? Do you think there is a limit to your growth potential?
I wouldn't say I was genetically gifted by any chance. You know, I definitely wasn't. You know, all the gains I made were slow, and they were like added. Bust my ass to get them.
Yeah.
So I seen guys who were coming from here to up here in the space of like 2 years. And I said to myself, right, this guy's got genetics where I haven't got the same genetics. So everything I gained was just down to graft and
work.
Pretty hard graft and then trying to follow as much, you know, a proper diet as I could. Supplements were basic, you know, and everything else was basic.
Yeah.
But you know, you see the guys coming along who, you know, I'm not mentioning names, but they just explode when they come through the door. And even they go away for a couple of weeks and come back again. You know, they haven't lost any muscle. Where if I stopped doing it for
a
week,
missed a meal,
I could drop a stone. And those guys just, you know, they have these genetics, they burn, but they haven't got it fucking up here.
Of course.
You know, they haven't got the headness. It would sicken you, like, because here's a guy, and you can see him coming, and you say, right, I'm going to nurture this guy, especially in my gym. Like, and I say, right, I'm going to try and take a scan of my wing and try and get him where he should be. But they haven't got the mindset, they haven't got the drive, the determination. they're lazy.
I think you need something more. Sometimes it comes down to something more. I know for like even looking back to myself when I did the show, it was something more than just doing a show. It was a fire there that I wanted to actually do this, to actually catapult myself to do something completely different within my own life.
Because
sometimes you do need that.
When you come out the other side, you know, you've learned so much about your body. You know, you put yourself through that struggle and your mind's stronger. It has to be stronger. You know, you respect food. You appreciate food more. You know, you have a different outlook on like eating takeaways to eating a nice steak dinner. So it definitely, it does give you a strength from, you know, a new goal in life.
Yeah.
By doing shows.
Yeah, it gives you a discipline, like, for sure.
It's the fucking hardest thing I've ever done, really, is definitely show prep. Because you're counting down minutes on the clocks. Like, and some people are designed it, some people fucking maybe aren't as well adapted. And I would say some people do one show and never come back.
It's not for everybody.
It's not for everyone.
You know, not everybody's going to be a bodybuilder, no matter what.
It takes a fucking...
You kind of get what you want out of it. Like, and I did the same. I did one show and that was it. I got what I wanted and got what I needed.
You tried different hours, couple of shows, I remember. You did come back and you said, I want to do this one and I want to do that one.
Was that wee bug there in there? Like,
and you had a ring booked and you were
going away.
And then you can't eat.
And then you grow up. You can't fucking work. Go to the gym.
Where's Foxy? He's not going to... Whereas he's not coming on the train.
I seen the light.
Maybe Emma's seen the light. Maybe give you the back of hand.
She says,
no more Foxy, you're jumping off. Get back on the spuds.
Hold on, I'm going to change the subject. So, moving on to Pro Gym, was it a natural transition or was it, did you have a goal in mind that you wanted to open up your own gym?
I think, going back to Pete's days, you know, that sort of gave me the goal to think, you know, I could maybe open a gym sometime. After Pete's closed, we trained at different places. We trained in Dibbs Gym, William Street. Where else did we train? I think it was mainly Dibbs Gym. John took it over, and we John Buchanan. But I think training in there, and then I seen the opening, I seen where I'm based now in the Strand Road, that was vacant.
Yeah.
And we done and chatted to the guys who own it, and thought, you know, this could be an incredible gym. You know, it's a best location in town, good size, low ceiling, and the atmosphere is going to be good in it. So when I seen that property and we worked out a deal, I thought, right, got to get in here. So I just went for it, got a loan, got a pile of cash together, went over to a guy in London outside Harrow and bought a load of machines. And I never even had them in the gym yet, you know. And there was guys knocking at the door going, are you opening up? When are you opening up? You know, so they were keen to get in. They sort of heard the grapevine that the gym was going in there. So before he even opened, there was like 20 guys looking at training.
Queuing up.
And then whenever, of course, when it did open, they were coming from Dibbs Gym. They were coming from different gyms.
It was my first experience of a real proper gym. Like, my first experience of training, I always had, obviously, playing football and boxing and stuff, but never ever lifted weights, and I was a wee skinny runt. Like, my first gym as well, too, was in the complex, that bottom gym in the complex, and was just down lifting, hadn't a clue what I was doing. Like, still don't really have a clue what I'm doing. But it was still just doing everything and anything. And then
full body workouts.
Ray Kelly, he said to me, I was working with Ray at the time, and he says that you were opening up the gym, so we came up and seen. And you were actually just moving the machines and stuff on at that time. And then we joined up and it was like, geez, no, this is a gym. Like, this is a proper gym. And that was my kind of first real experience of going into a proper setup in terms of a gym. And as I was saying earlier, just before we come on, it was kind of at that stage, when you're 18 or 19, going on at night and the music and the atmosphere and the sweat and the guys were just fucking humongous. Like, it was daunting. But as you say, you can either take that two ways. Like, it was daunting or it was inspiring. But at that time, I just floated on and out for a while. I wasn't really getting, like, properly in that mindset that you need to even train properly. But the atmosphere was always something that really stood out in that gym. Like, and it was kind of that hardcore feel that you had to kind of adapt it. And actually, it really, really motivated you and pushed you on. Like.
And you weren't really working at the time, sure you weren't?
No, I wasn't working, no.
So I think, did we give you a few hours, anyway?
I started working. No, I think it would have been a while after that. I kind of floated on and out. Not really training properly, not really committing myself, and then I started really kind of committing to the whole training.
And then we did a few workouts together too, didn't we?
I started training then, and then I went and watched the show in Belfast.
Aye.
And me and Dave went up and I had the idea, he says, I wouldn't mind actually doing that show next year. And he kind of says, well, let the kind of fire, if you really put your head down, like, and really focus, you could do it. So I think that was the initial spark. And then I started working on there, and then we started training together. And like, even going back to that training time, the thing that still stands out to me was it was just a no-nonsense approach.
Nah, that's it, man.
When I was training with Dave, there was no real talking.
No.
You didn't talk until after the session. And you were afraid to even try and talk.
No time to chat during a workout.
And like, as he says, like, legs, people fear legs and stuff. Back, training back was like the toughest workout I used to have on my Dave. Like, it had been just absolutely shattered after it, like. But it was like, I took that then as inspiration for myself starting as PTing, because it was that kind of no-nonsense approach and just actually just put your head in focus and really dedicate yourself to it. Like.
Yeah, that's what we were born out of. We said that before. Like, we were born out of the bodybuilding experience and that's the way we treated clients. It was straight down the line.
Oh, for sure.
Did this, it was boom, 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 and you get this movements. At the end. And even diets was pretty strict. Like,
yeah.
It was fucking proper strict, like, to be fair. I think I threatened a couple of my clients. But it was, and you get from
it's
A
best,
to B.
It's the best way to start, I think. It's the only way to start.
I think
it
was
just gives you the basics
for
everything, you know, the basics to improve on and build on.
And I actually had written down that I was going to introduce you to someone that is very straight up, you know. I remember people always coming over and saying to me, and we spoke about this earlier, you know, I went down and stripped off for Dave there for doing a show or whatever, and he basically said, "You're shite."
Put your pants back on again. Start swimming.
Like, the boys were 3 weeks out from the shows and they were crying actual tears when they come out. Well, no. But which is what you need, because fucking bodybuilding is so, it's a subjective sport. If you're not willing to put yourself up there in front of a judge
and
who's obviously judging
you,
then
you're saving yourself a lot of embarrassment and doing that earlier on. Like,
because
I was saying, like, even we were chatting, like, I was on, mine, I put it up on Facebook 2 months ago, was standing in front of the mirror doing a few side raises, and he comes up and punches me in the back and gives me a look to say, "Shut that."
The body
there.
You're being good to yourself, Foxy.
But I suppose, like, for yourself, you've seen so many people have come through the gym that have been competing, and at the end of the day, you have to be honest with people because they're representing your gym.
They're representing me, like, my name, and the gym. If they're standing stage from pro gym, you know, it's all coming back at me.
Yeah, of course.
People are going to say, "Look, you know, like, Fox put him up on stage, you know, what was he thinking?" You know what I mean? So if me as a judge, I'm straight down the line, I'll tell you if you're shit, you know, and I'll sort of save you the embarrassment of going up on stage. I would like somebody to do the same to me. And I had a guy who was prepping me, and he would have done the same thing. I would have flown over to Leeds to a guy, Ken, stayed a day, trained, stripped off, and the same thing. He would have come over with a pinchers, with the calibers around the back, and just wrote a few notes and just shook his head and walked away. And
I was
I paid him, and I was happy enough to do it to him. And I knew that, right, when this Ken guy gives me a compliment, I've earned it. You know what I mean? And that's the same way I always treat clients, you know. There's no point of blowing smoke up our ass. Don't be telling them they're looking great, because if you do, what happens then? They go away and usually treat themselves. You're doing great. And I've fallen out with loads of guys over the years. Some great bodybuilders have trained in the gym and they've left because I've told
them.
You've
been straight down.
You know, they're standing in the back room, standing their cacks, whatever. And they says, "What do you think I've got to lose?" And I go, "Stone and a half." Their face just drops. And he goes, "Oh, well, I thought it was 4 or 5 pounds." I was going, "No, sorry. You have a stone and a half to lose."
Yeah.
And they've left the gym because of that.
Yeah.
But when you know who it is, do you?
Well, you know what? the thing about bodybuilding, obviously, there's massive egos involved in it. Like, and because it can be self-centered at a point, especially like when you're a few weeks out from a show and you've got the blinkers on and you don't see anything else but you in the mirror and what you're going to do in that stage. Like, and I suppose a reality check every now and again, they bring someone down. They feel you're offending them.
Of course, they go away and they go, "Ah, bastard."
You know, and they curse you. And I've found that from shows, running shows.
See, a day later when they think about it, they come back and go, you know what? You're right.
Exactly.
You're right.
Yeah.
And I've done the same too. I have people telling me, like one of my ex-partners too, used to say to me, "Look, you know, cut that sauce out from now. You know, you're not eating that anymore." And I went, you know what, and then I fell over him, and then next day I thought, they're right. They're only saying it because it's true. Like,
and like when you think, "Oh, cut that sauce out," but that's the last wee bit of flavour you have in your fish. And that's the last you're getting for about 6 or 8 weeks.
Just cardboard from then on in.
I mean, dude.
Cardboard, like, and curtains.
For me, again, it was everything was just completely new. And I was like one of those guys too, like, to get a meticulous where the diet I had was like every couple of hours, and there was times on it at the start when I had to eat it.
Yeah.
And I literally thought that he had to eat it
at that
on
time.
The hour. And I wouldn't eat it. five past or even 5:02 at the start. I was like, it was on the air every fucking hour. And the day we went to Belfast, it was not too far from it, that show that I did. And I had like a whole collection of tubs on my foot. And he's, many fucking minutes have you got in there? I says, as many as you had down. And we're dragging ourselves around. Well, I was dragging myself around Belfast. He was dragging me around. And my feet were dragging. I didn't drink coffee. And he says, we'll go into Starbucks. And I got a fucking chocolate maca. It was like 4 weeks out from the show. And it was like, oh, Jesus.
You were bouncing,
my eyes were standing in my head. Like caffeine, sugar, everything. Bouncing around Belfast. But it was mad.
He just probably couldn't fucking listen to you. I'll give him 400 calories here so he can fucking pick the piss up.
Sure, again. Don't have to carry him around Belfast anymore.
But I've found it by running the shows that even, you know, competitors get really upset when they don't come first. You know what I mean? And everyone thinks they're first. And my ma always said to me, every show I'd done, I was first. And like, you know, she got on my head. You should have been first.
You're the best. Get your ma to judge.
Where the fuck did I come last? You're right, mommy. You're fucking right. I should get her to judge actually anytime.
You actually are. You're judging now in Pakistan, is it?
We're going, Masoom's invited me over to Pakistan, over to do the Mr. Ironman contest. Right. It's the first of it. So they want judges from outside the country over. So they invited me and Vince D'Alessandro from England. And the three of us are going to go over to this show in Pakistan. And I'm going to judge, and I'm assuming doing a guest spot. And hopefully it's a big success because, you know, it's the first time.
First time
out. And looking forward to it, but scared too at the same time. But afraid.
Hopefully you get him.
And obviously, Masoom, has he got any shows come up soon himself?
Like, he's guest spot at this, so he's going to be in good nick for this. And then after that, he's looking at maybe we're going to the Toronto Pro with Emma, my partner. She's coming over to do her first pro show. Masoom done that last year, so it'll be good if Masoom could do that this year. It's about 18 weeks away. So
In terms of competitors from the gym, you have a lot of boys going for, is it Muscle Contest down in
Muscle Contest Ireland? So this is the second year of that. Brian Bullman runs that show. He's from Limerick, but he lives in California. So he's bringing all his team over again. One of the pro league shows. So there's 6 pro cards given out.
Brilliant.
Emma got a pro card last year.
That's right.
And we're taking a team of 5 down. So
brilliant. Excellent.
There was kind of a wee bit of a dip, wasn't there, with bodybuilding? Especially it was more the kind of physique classes and started popping up as well too. Do you feel it is kind of getting a resurgence again? Are you seeing it in the gym with people looking to compete?
Definitely, yeah. There always is a dip, you know, even going to the local shows, the Belfast shows, you know, you'd see maybe 2 or 3 years, where's all the bodybuilders?
Yeah.
You know, there's loads of all physique class and bikinis. Where's all the bodybuilders going? But I think now it's growing. It's like there's so many different federations. You have UKBFF still big, NABA's big, you have PCA, and you have all these muscle contests, Two Bros Pro. So you have so many shows. You could have a show a weekend if you want, and you can pick and choose. Everything's, it's all open to any federation. You don't have to stick to one federation, which is good, you know, because for years
it was always, you're one of the
They were sort of bitchy about it if you went to the NOR federation. But like any guy off the street now can do like a muscle contest or a Two Bros Pro. If he's good enough, he can get a pro card.
It's fucking unreal. I suppose that is the golden ticket, because IFBB pro cards were, you know,
fucking far between.
My God, no one had. Well, who have we got in Ireland actually has one?
We have 5 or 6 now pros in Ireland. That's what Bullman was just saying.
And that's in the
for
past.
For years we had 1 or 2. Now you have I can't even remember the names, but there's about 5 or 6 pros.
Unreal.
Good pros.
Aye.
You know, all around Ireland.
Just because they were given a chance.
Just because of these new shows coming up, new competitions.
And so, where do you see it kind of going, Dave? Have you any inclination in terms of bodybuilding where your gym's going or where the actual scene's going now? Because it does seem to be maybe slipping more away, not away from the physique shows, because they're huge still, the bikini thing's still quite big. But are we going back towards bodybuilding? Is people starting to say this is, because I think that is a physique, classical physique, and it seems to be a big category now.
So guys are dropping down from bodybuilding classes, aye, dropping maybe 20 or 30 pounds and fitting into a classic.
Aye. And classic, I would say, class. You could think that that was a genetic reason, but I think that class is packed with unbelievable genetics. Loads. In terms of tiny waists and fucking massive shoulders and yep, chests. Like, and it seems to be a while a popular one now. It wasn't even available.
Which is good too, because it's taken away from all that stenching and guys, you know, with awful right, shapes. And even the Olympia, you look at the Olympia lineup last year, like Sean Roden,
aye,
bringing it back to the, that's small right, waist, you know, bringing it back to the aesthetic look, yeah, and taking away from Phil Heath. And I think if Sean Roden wins a few years now, it's going to keep pushing that
look, aesthetic look.
You know, we're getting away from the big and mass monsters.
What do you prefer, Bud?
Aye, Sean Roden. Aye. I love that kind of shape, you know.
Aye.
I like seeing big mass monsters, but I don't like that heavy gut, you know.
No.
You know, where you can see the gut from the back shots. You know, yeah, that's sort of, that's not exactly a good look, you know.
No. What do you, where do you stand on the health side of it? Like, see, in terms of the mass monsters coming on, like, do you think that it would be, like
what they're using,
detrimental
stuff?
No, well, even that size of muscle mass to try and, not even on what supplements might be used, but what, in terms of health?
I think most of those guys, you know, the likes of Phil Heath, okay, he had a bit of a distension, he has a bit of a problem with his lower gut this year, last year, sorry. But if you look at the way he uses the rest of the year, like he done a podcast there, and he said for the last 4 months, I think it was since September, he didn't train, you know, and his coach, jeez, told him, just go to the gym, mess about, and no heavy training. And you can see, I've seen the look on the picture on the podcast, his face has changed, body's shrunk down, and he just looks as if he's lost about 30 or 40 pounds.
But he goes healthy. The stress in the body?
No, he just told us to take that amount of time off and let the body recover.
Well, you're pushing weights, heavy weights like that too, obviously, on your joints and stuff. Like, you would imagine after fucking constant abuse, it's going to be quite sore in the joints.
So I think some of the top guys do, they just step back completely. They let their bodies recover. They let their bodies, you know, as you said, joints.
They should be learning from Alexa Ronnie Coleman. Like, I think boys at that level, they need to be learning from him. Look at this.
He was a monster lifter. He was a heavy. Would you take months off? I never took any fucking months off because I was too.
Again, when you're sort of living it and you're working on it and you're there every day,
step out of it.
I don't take any time off.
Yeah, but there was for a while. But you weren't, when you just moved on the pro gym for a while, you weren't competing.
No, competing wise, you know.
Would you still pushing it in the gym, like, or would you?
Oh, still train good. I still like, you know, going and lifting heavy weights. Still like push myself if my joints feel okay. You know, a certain day, I'll try and I'll push that wee bit extra. You know, just to see how it feels.
Yeah.
But as far as the competing side goes, no, the competing's finished. You know, I know
definitely not.
I know that my body's never going to stand on stage again.
Not
are you not sure
a
chance.
About that? Even though you loved it, obviously. Was there a kind of maybe a weight off your shoulders as well? And too, where you go, you know what, right, I'm happy. I'm kind of at that stage where I've done enough shows and I can just kind of relax now and actually enjoy my training more.
Most guys, they have the same kind of outlook. You know, they get the 40, 50, close to 50, and they think, I've still got one of them. I've still got one more show. And you always have that, everybody's that mentality, they have one more show, more show. And I always thought that, but then being realistic and seeing what I'm doing now, I have a young wee girl of three, and moving in with Emma and her house, you know, and things are just more settled in my life. And I think for me to put myself through that again, it wouldn't be worth
all the
hassle and struggle.
Well, she's doing all the shows now, anyway.
She's doing the shows.
She's won more than I've won in 30 years. She's won more in 5 years.
She's been phenomenal, hasn't she?
So would you say then that you're kind of more interested in the coaching side of it? You've done 40 shows, like, in terms of show prep. If I was going to get prepped by someone, I'm thinking,
right,
that's a fucking body. So is he more kind of concentrated on your clients and on your members, like, and driving them forward?
That's another thing too. If I was going to compete, you know, how am I going to get all my guys ready? You know, I couldn't do it both. You couldn't do
as
both
a coach, and
because, you know, guys message you all times of the day and they're, can I do this, can I do that, and they fry you up, like, but you still have to, you know, keep them right.
He stuck his finger up there as me.
I might text him going, can I eat chewing gum? Like, on the run up the show, just stay tight where you are. But like, panicking, no, you were just afraid to do anything that would have been detrimental.
So I couldn't do both. You know, if I was to compete again, I'd probably have to move into a a house of my own or a flat of my own. Move away from everybody and just get the gym covered. Do my own thing.
It's definitely better for business too. Big Dave the Grump.
I went through all them years and people, they don't forget it. Like they like to throw up your face.
No, because I actually, we were chatting about there before you
come
on.
May as well bring it up in the podcast.
And now they come on and say, geez, Dave's wild.
Dave's wild.
It's the first time I heard him speak in 3 years.
It must be the babies made him cam. Has to be. And it's true.
Is there one single, like in terms of venue, was there one place, obviously Park Avenue with the atmosphere, is there one place that you really loved actually standing on stage?
Some of the big shows, some of the NSA shows, which we'd done for a few years, German Federation, you know, and just the way they treated the athletes, you know, you went away to like Hamburg or Athens for the World Championships or some part of Europe. And they just treated you like, you know, the way you should be treated at the show.
Yeah.
You know, everything from the hotel to the backstage, they step on a stage and after show and, you know, like a going out for a big a feed and they were taking all the athletes out and slap up dinner. You couldn't have beat it. And the Germans know how to do it, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
They can put a good show together. Apart from that, probably a good two good shows in Brazil as well.
Right.
Two world champions have done in Brazil, and just the, I suppose the people there, you know, were really family, more or less. You know, you just sort of say, all the NABBA guys were all good. You know, that's why I'm sort of still with NABBA, because NABBA is a sort of like a small family, and they do sort of feel like you're sort of in a family. So any of those NABBA shows were really good. I say all the bigger shows, the world championships, the universes were always in either Birmingham or Southport, so you didn't really get away. You didn't see any parts of the country or parts of the world. So any, I suppose, of the big shows where you're away to a different country and different food and, you know, different people, those are the ones you remember.
And so now you've obviously the wee girl.
Yeah.
So she's your priority. She's got a lot to live up to now.
She's in the gym most days, I know, and she's
that's
like
my man down there. You know, the boy with the vest on there and your woman with the trophies. So she's gonna be the next on the scene.
She loves the gym, going into the gym every day, you know, and take me into the training room, daddy, take me into the training room. She goes around all the treadmills and she jumps in the bike and she jumps in the treadmill and the cross trainer, sorry.
And if she wanted to follow that line and she wanted to compete like her mum.
Aye, of course.
There
must be some genetics there for some sport. There must be some kind of genes there.
If
she wanted to do that, or if she wants to take over the gym at some stage,
Of course, same here. Like,
so Dave, for anybody that you've seen, obviously over the years, bodybuilders, and you've seen a lot of people coming through the gym competing, what has been kind of the one factor that stands out between guys who actually go through it, step on stage and compete, or between the guys that kind of get to a certain point, say they're going to compete and then stop? What's that? Because a lot of people do that, and there's some gifted people out there that get to nearly the stage and then they stop.
I think probably been in the gym for so many years, and you see all these guys coming and you see the guys that can grow fast. Okay, they've got great genes, but the guys that haven't got the great genetics but still can grow muscle, or the guys that'll come in and, you know, they'll go down the back and they'll train their backsides off, and they do all the hard exercises.
Yeah.
And if they come up and ask you, what do you think you should do now? And I say, right, do an R5 sets. And they don't question you. They just go away and do it, you know. Or if you say, right, go and deadlift now, five reps or five sets of five, whatever. And they just go, right, fair enough. You know, that's the guy that's going to, you know, that's the guy that can train right through the show, can diet through to the show, can do the cardio, won't question you back. We'll just do exactly what you tell, what you tell them, and they won't go away and cheat, you know, the weekends.
Yeah,
you know, that's the guy who's going to.
So it's a mindset do the best thing, really, isn't it?
I think it is. You just have to have it sort of, you know, I'm going to get in this gym and I'm going to lift whatever I need to lift, and I'm going to get as big as I can. You
it's
know,
that dogged just attitude, isn't it? You just have to go.
See, when it came to shows, I would have died to fucking get on stage. That seems ridiculous saying that now, but I always said, and I stood in front of a class, and this is how I feel whenever I was dieting. If someone had said to me, you know, you're going to go over to Denmark and try and get your pro card, but to do it, you're going to have to cut your finger off. I said, I'd have cut my fucking own finger off. I'm not a problem. I handed them. That wouldn't have cost me a thought. Like,
It's funny how you can get wrapped up in that bubble because that's all it means.
You don't see outside that
there's
bubble.
Outside of it.
You know, everything else is secondary. You know, you put your personal life, you put your family, your friends, your partner. your job even. Exactly. You know, and I know lots of guys who've lost partners and jobs over the head of bodybuilding and where to come fucking last for a shitty trophy. They've lost more or less half their life. And you can look back on now and go, well, you should have done things differently, but when you're in that bubble, and I've been in that bubble, and you two guys probably been in that bubble too, you can't see it.
It's good that I didn't have a coach whenever I was doing it. I just kind of took their long, done it myself. So if I had had someone like yourself, I could have been, you know, reminded of what's important and everything else. And I suppose from a coach's standpoint, now that's what you do, and that's the difference between having one and not having one. You could let yourself just go and do some stupid things. Anyway, talking from my experience, taking a lot of supplements, and I mean a lot of supplements, most of which I probably didn't need, and ending up in a bad place in terms of health and mind.
I think especially in that 12 or 16 weeks of dieting, you know, the first few weeks are okay. You're just sort of changing, the body's changing. You're just getting adapted to the food and everything else. But come that 8 weeks out and the last 4 and 6 weeks, this is where the guy comes in. This is where you need to have somebody you can turn to and come and say, look, will you have a look at me? Will you have a look at me? Diet, we used to watch me train and just tell me if I'm doing anything wrong. So that's when you need somebody in your that's honest, and somebody who's going to be straightforward with you, somebody who's been there and done it, and somebody who can guide you right into the day's show and keep you motivated and keep you in the right track. That's where the coaching part comes in, and that's what I love doing at the moment. You know,
I mean, that last 4 weeks, that felt like 4 months.
But it was
the longest 4 weeks hours ever.
It's a fucking dark place. Like, it is a dark place, and I mean, like, just a cloud following you around. Do you know what I mean? But again, I would have sacrificed anything to get it. And you know, if I had someone in my corner telling me, "Listen, you're doing this wrong," and we can do this a lot an easier way. Like, I would say, if anyone is thinking about doing it, definitely go and seek out some sort of coach to help them.
Especially that, you know, even the last 8 weeks, you know, the first few weeks you can mess about your own. You can get enough information from guys in the gym and stuff, but when you get down to nitty gritty, like, it has to be, you have to have somebody there, and you can turn to nearly every day.
And someone that's been there and done that a lot of times as
always. If you were coming on, kind of, I always mind being in that gym and people coming on, they were competing and they were coming on near that, like, 5-6 week mark, and they're coming on smiling and stuff, and David would be going, "You couldn't be dieting.
Get out.
You're smiling that way. He's fucking that dieting.
If you can't see your cheekbones and your eyes aren't popping out of your head, then you're not in the right place.
You're shuffling.
When he asks how you feeling, your response should be, "I feel like shit. Maybe he's dieting."
And it's only people who have done that and been there who can sort of sympathise with the people in the gym. Because anybody else goes up and goes, "How's the diet going now?" Then you're going, "Would you fuck off? Stop asking me. Would you stop asking me the same question? How are you feeling now? How's the diet going?
How does it look like I'm feeling? Look at me."
And then as soon as the show's over, "When's the next show?"
So the guys who have done it sort of know where to step back and know what questions they ask, but the rest of people just put their foot right on you.
Of course.
And annoy people.
Brilliant. Well, that's us, episode 10. Yeah. Excellent. Good. Thanks very much.
Thanks for
coming on.
Thanks for coming on. I know we could have covered a lot of more stuff, but sure.
Yeah.
Well, you know what, we'll get you on again, sir. We'll cover it.
That's it. So, excellent.
But thanks for coming over. And by the way, Dave, anyone's looking for Dave, you obviously get him on Facebook. He has his own Facebook page, Dave Fox, and then he has his
Pro Gym.
And Instagram.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Cheers.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, boys.
Thanks. Elevate.